Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Razor Riffs with Keith Razor and Alan Lee, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Excellent. We got another great show here. I'm Keith Razor with my trusty sidekick, Alan Lee.
Hello, everybody. Kyle Silver and away.
What?
Well, you know, you've cast me as Tonto and keeping everything real.
Okay, well, in that case, I'm here with my other trusty sidekick, Megan Jenkins.
All right.
Hi, I didn't bring a horse. No.
Oh, well, and tonight we have a guest in the studio. One of the best comedians around. He wrote for Roseanne. He has an HBO special and a Showtime special. And he was on a WTF with Mark Maron.
I told you earlier on how to pronounce that. You may see him earlier, Alan.
No, it's Mark Maron. I know.
Maron.
I know.
Not Marone or Maronic.
Nah. But we have the great Alan Steven here tonight.
Yes, indeed. Alan Stevens.
Hello.
How you doing, buddy?
Fine, and you?
Doing good. The joke about the Mark Maron thing is because we had Jeff Richards on a couple weeks ago, and I always say people's last names wrong, and then like I was like, oh yeah, I love that show WTF with Mark Maron, and he's like, yeah, you mean Maron, right?
Oh, people I thought you meant you got Jeff Richards wrong.
Jeff Ricardo.
Yeah, really.
So, Alan, what's going on, man? You been doing the road a lot?
No, I don't do the road.
You don't?
No.
Didn't you just do the Laugh Factory?
And yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah.
But that's not the road. That's Vegas.
That's the road for me. Nah. 6-hour drive.
No, I just shoot in and out. I have family there, and I like Harry.
Yeah.
I was hanging with Dice, I think, one time. So.
Oh, you were there with Dice?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I did the early shows. He did the late shows.
Fantastic. Oh. Wow.
Is he a cool guy?
Yes.
Yeah?
Very nice man.
He's a nice man? I've never met him.
Just like Howard Stern, what you see is different than what... Well, he's not that far different, but he's just not as amped up or as dicey in person.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, because like, I was watching this interview with Dice, because I've been trying to get him on this show, and I was watching this interview, and he went off on the guy because the guy was like, hey, don't you work at a gym or something? And then he went all nuts and stuff.
Oh.
You remember that?
Is that an old interview?
An old interview.
Well, obviously the guy said something to annoy him. I think it was more than that. Plus, sometimes Dice just likes to do that to create news.
Yeah. Well, I wrote his publicist, and I was like, I promise I won't say anything about a gym.
Who's his publicist? Why don't you just ask him?
Wait, what are you saying?
I think your volume is down.
You think my volume?
Yeah, just
or Alan?
Can you hear? Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear.
Can
Alan.
You hear Alan?
Can you hear
me?
I can hear
Alan. Alan,
can you hear me?
I'm Alan. Yeah.
All right, that's better.
I hear you fine.
Can you hear me now?
Can we all hear each other?
I can.
It was just a little quiet.
Was it just
me? Sorry to interrupt.
Was it just me?
Strange Twilight Zone episode.
No, they're like giving me these signals. Like, don't ask that. I was like, what was I asking?
She said.
Yeah, I just wanted the volume up a little bit.
Oh.
That's how ladies are. They like it up.
All right. Well, Alan...
I don't know where that came from. I'm just...
I don't even have anything to say to
by Alan.
Alan, didn't you have a question for Mr. Steven?
Well, you know, it's funny. Since you mentioned Dice, I remember a small little thing that Dice was having a little feud with it was, for heaven's sakes, Kinison.
Remember they Dice back and Sam are having a feud?
Yeah, that's what... tell me...
Hard to believe.
Okay, well, we'll delete that.
Those two have a feud with everybody.
Yeah.
Dice is really a nice guy.
Yeah, it was kind of
Sam,
a fun thing.
Well, Sam was a jealous idiot.
Really?
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I love Sam.
Yeah, you know, first off, they're night and day.
I would think so, yes.
And, you know, Sam always thinks everybody's in his arena stealing from him, but... not the case.
Yeah.
I'm on Dice's side in that battle.
Well, you heard it right here.
Boy, you guys are current on the news.
So
Dice did 25 years.
Just another little piece of trivia.
culture, you guys. Huh?
No,
cutting edge.
That's actually a great segue into one of your private. Yeah. You used to write for Roseanne.
She's still alive.
She is still alive. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, but, I was on that show for a few years and last year in an executive capacity, but it was fun.
Yeah.
She's a great lady, and I know her, 30-some years.
Yeah. Wow. She just unfollowed me on Twitter. It really hurt my feelings.
What'd you say?
Well, here's the thing. Here's what happened. My trusty co-host, Megan, tweeted Roseanne about doing the show, and Roseanne responded, yes, send me 3 questions. So then Megan texts me, and she's like, ask Roseanne 3 questions. And I was like, well, should I private message her since we follow each other? And Megan's like, no, she said it on Twitter, do it on public. So I was like, okay. So, you know, I don't know if you know what Twitter is, but Twitter...
Well, I've been on the planet now for a month and a half.
Yeah. But
I've taken some courses that are for aliens, and I've been explaining the Twitter.
Okay, so we could avoid that 5-minute awkwardness. But so Twitter, you only could tweet 140 questions, you know? So the 3 questions I was tweeting Roseanne, it turned out, you know, 140 and then tweet, 140, then tweet. So she got, like... maybe 20 tweets from me.
That's more than 3.
No.
Well, I think that would scare anyone.
So
you got to remember, even now, she's a huge star.
Yeah.
And at some point, it becomes stalkish.
Yeah, well, see, yeah. Well,
so
see.
Imagine somebody that doesn't know you, that's sitting there going... what is this guy's problem? And around the 19th time, she's got to go, you know what, I'm not doing this.
No, so... block. So here's what happened.
Yeah, block and lock.
So here's what happened. So then I tweeted the questions, and then she never responded. And I was like, hey, I texted me, and I was like, hey, did Roseanne ever text you back?
No, no. Keith texts me, and he goes, stop tweeting Roseanne. And I'm like, I'm not.
No.
So wait a minute. I don't make not operate the tweet.
Yeah.
But you do?
No, I do my Twitter. And
apparently repeatedly.
Yes. But no, but
you,
so...
You might want to take that course I just did.
But see, the thing is like, I have Asperger's, so, you know, and on my Twitter it says that, you know, and... Yeah, you know, so I thought Roseanne knew that because
well, around the 14th when you go, be Asperger's and a stalker. you know that only gets you so far in this world.
So
it's a cold out there.
So then I waited like 2 hours and I never heard back from Roseanne. And at this time, she's still following me, right? So then I thought, okay, I'll direct message her, which is private. I was like, hey, Roseanne. So those are the 3 questions. As you can tell, the podcast is more about talking and getting to know people. And then she responded. She's like, I said contact my publicist and stop asking me or I'll block you. And then she sent me her publicist's email. And then she unfollowed me.
And you Twittered him 300 times?
No, I emailed him, but I thought if Roseanne really hated me, she wouldn't have sent me
that. Well,
no,
let me think. In the world of call my publicist, yeah, that's a blow-off.
Really? Yeah.
Uh-oh.
So, Alan, are you worried that you think Keith's stalking Roseanne and then we have you on the show right
now?
No,
you know, I have fat little fingers, so when I even text, sometimes it comes out looking like another language. So my suggestion to Keith is maybe stop hitting that same button. The celebrity, the less intrusive you want to be.
Yeah.
So 20 times and then a private message seems a little...
Yeah, that's what I said. But Megan, to be fair, did you not tell me to tweet that?
To be fair, I didn't know you were going to tweet her 40 times. I thought you were going to tweet 3 questions
because
I did.
Tweet her
I tagged your name in it,
well,
so I thought she would know it was you.
Sent?
Oh, no, because each one got resent because there's only 140 characters. So my questions were, like, longer than 140 questions. Like, one question I said, because, like, I opened up for Tom Arnold. I was like, hey, are you and Tom Arnold still on good terms? And then, you know.
Oh, my publicist.
Yeah.
He said, did...
Go ahead.
I don't know. I got distracted. Forget it.
Why would you ask anybody who's divorced... Boy, are we current, what, 20 years?
Yeah, we yeah. don't kid around. This is a historical show.
Well, I just found out they got divorced.
Oh, man.
No, but no, so I didn't, I mean, like, I could see where, but Megan was like, hey, tweet her. I was like, I'd rather just DM her, but she said tweet her, so I did. So, like, to be fair, yes, it was my fault, but it was also 50% my new co-host's fault.
I wouldn't say 50%.
It sounds like she was doing her job. I suggest
I got her to you.
Yeah.
I don't know. You were tagged in it, so I thought she knew that you would be. It just made sense because I told her you were the host, so I thought it would. Mm. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't have favorited and retweeted every question you.
Yeah. Maybe. She started it, and then I finished it.
I had no part of this.
Yeah, Mr. Lee did not have it.
I don't get involved.
So what other celebrities have you stalked for this show?
Stalked for the show? Oh, I haven't stalked anyone. I don't know where Roseanne lives.
But, I mean, we're looking at John Cusack.
We're stalking him?
Yeah. I mean, I'm stalking him.
Really?
She's stalking him.
Yeah. I've been making collages. Oh, no, this is serious.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I don't think that has anything to do with the show.
Well, I'm a huge John Cusack fan, but I am, yeah.
I think she has other things in mind than you do.
Yeah, she obviously does.
Yeah,
but
I got
like,
a sleeping bag in the back of my car.
Yeah, yeah, there you go.
But see, like, John Cusack, a lot of people don't know about John Cusack is he does karate or, like, kickboxing. And I find that subject very...
Well, next time I'm in the alley with him, I won't challenge him. Well, that's current, too. Back issues of Us from 1990.
Oh, God.
So back in 1990, did you know that Darlene was going to be gay? Did you know? Were there any signs? Like, did she bring any women to the set? Or
Oh, in real life?
Yeah.
Well, and
I can't think of her real name. I know, but I can't think of her real name.
Sarah Gilbert?
Thank you, yes.
What was your question?
I think the question is, did you know that she was going to like the ladies?
Yeah.
Well, I think it was a mixed bag. And tell you the truth, all I was concerned about was how good she was, and she always delivered.
Yeah, she was really talented.
You keep up with everybody's nonsense there. But, you know, besides the stars, there's a crew. And you live together. It's like a family. So, of course, you hear everybody's nonsense, but you put it aside. It's like working in a restaurant. You ever do that? You know everybody's business.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then, you know, they're 9 years, so you get on each other's nerves. Somebody misquotes something. But it's, you know, all in the day's work.
How many writers were, like, on each season?
4,000.
4,000?
That's
no,
a lot.
Some shows can do it. She had 26.
26 per season?
Which is a lot.
Wow.
I think, you know, a lot of shows. You know, a network show, you got to remember, you're turning out, at least in my day, 24 to 26 shows a year.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to have a real rating. You know, what a top show rated today is a 3 or a 4. We used to get 19s into the 20s, or we were thrown off the air. So the business has changed that way.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I think because there's a lot more shows and a lot more stations now than they were back then.
A lot of competition, less quality.
Yeah, that's a good strategy of what I was going to say. Because, like, I think Roseanne was like a great show,
groundbreaking.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And like nowadays, I can't even think of a show that really sticks in your head. I mean, I think the last
one. They're there, but you got to look to them because it's either on Netflix or Hulu. If you're talking network. I don't think there are any network shows.
Yeah.
You know, Chuck Lorre, I don't know. Every now and then, you know, Mom is trying to be, tackle today's subjects. Even that Carmichael show is trying. Even though, you know, the real reason that's on the air is David Alan Greer and the one playing his wife.
Yeah.
You know, like with Raymond, you know, you're tuning in for the parents.
Yeah.
But they're all trying to be controversial and tackle issues, and also just the language on network TV. I think Seinfeld or I was the first to bleep a sitcom. And then we used to push the envelope all the time and get in trouble for it. And I just saw a commercial for something on MTV I just thought was disgusting the other day. And I'm no prude. Right. It's just that now it's all shock, no content.
Yeah, I agree. I don't like watching 16 and Pregnant either.
Sorry, someone got there first. Damn, I had my eye on that little 16-year-old.
No, I guess that's an MTV show. But no.
MTV used to make such beautiful videos. I remember Richard Belzer, I think, starred in the first video, a Pat Benatar video. Might have been the first or second one or something like that. But now you tune in, and it's like everything but a music video, unless it's 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
I mean, just nonsense.
That's true, yeah.
But then again, what do I know? One time I had a pitch at Oxygen, and I had hired the lady who I was pitching to. I had used her uncle on Arliss. His name's escaping me now. Really talented, funny man. And so I, you know, had something in common. We're talking. And they had just put on a show at the time called Bad Girls Club. Mm-hmm. And I made the mistake of going, what an annoying show. That one heavyset girl should be taken out and choked and beaten with a wet rag. And she goes, oh, you mean the one that gets 20,000 letters a week? Or maybe she shouldn't. So there goes selling the show I was there for.
I have to change the subject for 2 seconds because I got a tweet from the person who's sponsoring this episode, and I forgot to mention it. But this episode of Razor Riffs with the great Alan Steven is being sponsored by a stand-up magazine. So you could get the order of stand-up magazine on astandupmagazine.net. And this month's cover has Theo Vaughn on it. And all right, back to Alan Steven.
Very good.
You're going to plug a little more than that.
No, we're going to plug it away during the whole show.
I've seen stand-up.net.
Yeah. They're but stand-up magazine.
On the pop culture.
Yeah, yeah. He actually wanted me to ask you if you want to do the magazine. And I
do
said
I have to do it new?
No.
Back in the 70s, they asked me to do, I think Elaine Boozler had a friend that did play girl. Uh-huh. And I was very flattered, but I didn't see how that would help my comedy career. And there was no need to be laughed at. I like to be laughed with. So I passed on that, but sure, I'll do stand-up. There you go. Not only did we plug it, but you hooked me without any stalking.
Z is publicist.
Oh, man. So, Mr. Lee, didn't you have some comedy store questions?
Oh, you know, it's ancient history, and so I feel that...
Yeah. You know, when you I feel like a shrink entered the room. It's just such a soft voice. I'm waiting for him to go.
I appreciate that.
And then they beat you.
And they really hurt you.
I see where the problem is.
Oh, my.
Wow, what a voice.
Wow. No, you're such, you know, he's a historical, just a complete encyclopedia of that period, which really, you know, we had artists.
I like how you started with historical and backed off of it. Argus, let me tell you about Argus.
We love Argus.
We started at the same time, but his mind for the past, he'll give you dates and times and tell you what color shirt everybody had on.
Exactly.
That's what he did here.
He did that.
Incredible mind.
He was telling us how, like, Richard Pryor used to have the Thursday show every December and sold it out. And then I was like, oh, did this happen every week? He's like, oh, it happened about once a month. And then I was like, so it started in December? And he, like, remembered every single date. I was like,
well, when he was getting ready to do a concert, he would come in every night.
Yeah.
And that would go on for 3 or 4 months. And what he'd do is he'd come in with no material. And they'd all be going, Richard, do this, do that. And he goes, did it already. And he'd talk for, like, 3 minutes and walk off. And they go, what was that? And then, you know, sometimes I'd follow him. Like, I'll tell you what that was. That was called free. I got in free to see him. But then the next night, you know, it might be 5 minutes. By the end of the week, it might be 12 minutes. By the end of the month, it might be 15 minutes. And that's how he built each concert. He built it at the store.
Now, do you still go to the Comedy Store a lot? Or
rare occasions.
Yeah.
You know, she's not there.
Yeah.
There's only a handful of people that sadly, I go for the memorials because I always speak.
Yeah. But you don't, like, perform and stuff.
It's too crazy over there anymore and homogenized for me.
Yeah.
And the politics of it doesn't interest me.
Yeah. That's a good way to say it.
Alan Bursky swung by.
Yes, he called me that night.
He might have mentioned that to you.
Yes, he called me that night to tell me the new manager was a nice guy, and apparently Alan, who I happen to like, must have been in a good
mood. Nice guy.
Yeah.
Very nice guy.
Yeah, Adam Egitt is a great guy. We love Adam.
You worked with him at the Ventura Comedy Club.
He was there before it was like, he might have been there before Mitzi even had it, when Sammy had it. Because he's the youngest guy ever on The Tonight Show. Have you had him on?
Who, Alan Bursky?
Yeah.
No, we have not, but
he's the youngest guy to ever do The Tonight Show. Then he did whatever sitcoms was out then, and The Mervs and The Mikes. Mm-hmm. And then his best friend was Freddie Prinze.
Yeah, that's what I did.
Then he becomes a top agent, a top manager. He's worth talking to.
Yeah, well, I did the...
I didn't know
him you can stalk.
I did the...
he is a publicist.
I did the Ventura Comedy Club... a couple years ago with
Ventura
Ida
Harbor.
Yeah, Ventura Harbor Comedy Club with a couple years ago with Ida Rodriguez. And Alan Bursky was the special guest drop-in. And he watched my set and he said that I was the funniest guy he's ever seen in the past week. So I was like, oh, okay. Like, I didn't know who he was. He's like, I'm coming back into stand-up now.
Listen, for Alan to do that, he must have thought you're funny.
Yeah.
He's not a compliment guy.
It really?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was like... because he said he was just now getting back into it. He said he does cruise ships and stuff. And then he's like, yeah, I was the youngest guy to be on The Tonight Show. And then I thought, oh. And then when he said he was Freddie Prinze's best friend, I was like, oh, he must have been one of those guys that... because Freddie Prinze is a comic who killed himself.
I think he was gone by 23.
Yeah.
So he accomplished movies, a hit sitcom, and was a headliner in Vegas, played the White House...
That's right.
23, I think.
The White House.
Played the White House? He didn't tell me that.
Everything you can do, Freddie Prinze did in a very short time.
Oh, I thought we were talking about Alan Bursky.
Well, Alan has quite a career, too. We were all at Freddie's funeral. It's the first celebrity funeral I've ever attended.
Yeah. That was... that must have been terrible because, like, I always see him on the, like, YouTube and stuff, and he was just so funny and stuff. And then, like, he has a son called Freddie Prinze Jr. Did you know that?
Well, that's what you would call a son.
So, yeah.
Who's married to a celebrity and is a producer and actor.
Yeah, but see, like, I don't want to get Freddie Prinze Jr. on the show because I'd ask him questions about Freddie Prinze.
Well, he wouldn't know any except what he knows from his mother and people like Alan Bursky.
Yeah.
Because he was a baby.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Yeah. And then, like, at the Comedy Store, I also heard that during the strike, there was a comic that had killed himself that you were there for, that he jumped off the bridge or something.
I believe my buddy Mitchell Walters was there, and as he looked out the window, he said, Alan, I think it's raining cats and comics.
That's what you, yeah. So tell us the story. What happened?
Well, there was a strike, which is a very long story.
Yeah.
But there was a cat named Steve Lebeckin, and he was part of a team. Then he wasn't, then he was. And he jumped off the Hyatt House and missed the Comedy Store. He hit the ramp. But he was striking out front. Mitzi looked out the window and said, what's he doing there? He's supposed to be in La Jolla tonight. I'm not going to have a guy strike and then work. So I think she canceled him. And then back then, people who were crazy thought she controlled show business, and it got to him. But I remember it's such a long story. They put a dummy in her office. They broke in and said she killed him. Truth of the matter is, I helped clean out of his apartment. He had shoe boxes dating back a couple years. Dear Mom and Dad, I want to take my life. So it was always in the back of his mind. He wasn't a happy, well-put-together, mentally man, and he found an excuse. But to say it was just because of his strike is a little absurd.
Yeah. Yeah, that's scary. You cleaned out his apartment, too, and you found all these...
Well, it wasn't scary.
Well, no, for like...
I knew the guy. I forget there was a few of us. So I don't even remember how I got there. I'm sure Argus would.
Yeah. And then it's weird because, like,
get on the roof of the store and pee down on the comics.
Did he really?
You've heard that. You've heard that.
I've never heard that.
Yikes.
Yellow rain.
Wow.
Yep.
I heard that you used to babysit Pauly Shore.
And he lived with me for a year in La Jolla.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Was he like a rug a rat?
Well, yeah. Depends on what year you got him. When he was trying to be normal and had a little league team, we used to all take his mom's limo, and we'd sit there in the stands, and you would hear this. Will Paul assure his family and our friends, please tone down the language and be quiet? Poor kid, that's how he grew up. Originally, Mom went with Steve Landisberg, if you know who he was.
Yeah.
Great comedian.
Great comedian.
And are we allowed to say dirty words?
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah, this show is being brought to you by the Stand Up Magazine.
All right. Because I remember one day, I think Polly might have been 7.
Uh-huh.
Maybe 6. He was running through the house, and Steve grabbed his arm and said, "Hey, hey, hey, slow down or I'll rip your dick off." So this is what Paulie grew up with.
And he was 7 when he said
everybody seven? Was his, you know, there was a handful of us that were the inner circle, plus Steve. So he grew up around nothing but funny and crazy.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
In fact, he didn't want his mom or dad to know he was doing comedy. I took him out around town before his own dad did. So, and he'd say, "When am I ready to see my mom?" He'd go, "You're ready to see Mitzi, I'll let you know. You can see your mom at any time. But you're not ready to see Mitzi."
That's really cool. That's really. How did you get started in this? How did?
I was I was a model with my mother when I was a kid. And then around 9 or 10, she said, "Want to do TV commercials?" And I did that till about 13, 14. Then I tried school for a while. And then I went to college briefly. And it was all about acting for me, and I came out here to be an actor, and I met 2 comics, Mitchell Walters and a guy named Bobby Lord. And I hung with them, and they said, "You ought to come to the store." And they needed bodies back then, and I auditioned, and I got in.
That's awesome.
And 9 years later, I became funny.
It's weird, because I've been doing stand-up for a while, and I've only been funny for maybe 2 years.
Well, Buddy Hackett and those from that generation, and even now, it takes about 10 years. There are exceptions, like a Robin Williams, but it takes about 10 years. Could go faster, but to learn to be funny at 2 in the morning, 2 in the afternoon, is a big difference. To play to 2 people, to 20,000 people, it's a big difference. So to encompass everything, to become a well-rounded comedian and understand it, and finally know, sometimes it's about the material, sometimes it's about the tricks. Mm-hmm. Depends on what kind of comic you are, and sometimes it just has to do with you're just plain funny.
Now I have a question. Which one do you enjoy more? Did you enjoy stand-up or writing?
Stand-up more. But I do enjoy writing when I see them produced.
Uh-huh.
And of course the money's beyond ridiculous, so it's a tough question for me.
Well, no, because Fred Wolf, he's one of my favorite. Do you know who Fred Wolf is?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite writers.
Stalked him?
No, I have not stalked him. But I love Fred Wolf, and then he's one of my favorite writers because I think everything he writes is so funny. But I've never seen a stand-up, and I hear he was a great stand-up.
You know, I don't remember.
Yeah.
You know, everybody has their taste in stand-up. I remember. And I know this fellow has a few books out, and I can see his face. But 100 years ago, I worked with this guy, I can't remember his name, in New York. And he couldn't buy a laugh. I went on, and I killed, and I had driven him there. I picked him up, and driving back, he says, "Boy, I wish I could get it down like you."
Was it Fred Stoller?
Yes. And the next night...
Oh, that's right.
The next night...
You told me this.
Yeah. I'm watching The Tonight Show, and I go, "Wait a minute. What the hell's that crap he's been feeding me?" And I'm throwing shoes at the TV. I go, but his thing is some cats are born for a live audience. Some are born to do 5-6 minutes. My whole thing was all I ever wanted to be was a lounge comic in Vegas.
The director wants you to talk more into the mic.
Well, that's too bad.
But
I was comfortable, director.
I actually have another Twitter question for him. It's about Roseanne again. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
So I looked this up, so I'm a little uncomfortable asking because I know you wrote this last episode.
She's one of my dearest friend. I love her.
Oh, dearly. No, it's not even about her. It's about the actual last episode.
Well, before you start, and that person's listening, I will tell you, there's no way to make everybody happy ending a show. is everybody has a preconceived notion. We got beat up pretty good. However, a few years later, we still are considered one of the top 10 two-part endings ever. That was good. But I'll take that question now.
It was just, how did you feel about it? How did you feel about the last episode?
The very last half hour, I felt great about because I wrote it. And I thought, how do I put this? I thought the message that was given was terrific, if somebody's really listening. And the weirdest part is she said to me, I just want something to say at the end, maybe on the screen. And I had a saying in my pocket by T.J. Eliot or whoever, I forget. And I had had it in there for 15, 16 years. I mean, it was unfolding it would crumble. And that's the saying that went up on the screen.
Wow.
And I think it's a positive message. Also, we didn't go out on a ha, 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 because people realized John Goodman had died. John Goodman, I mean Dan Connor. And what you saw might necessarily not been the way these characters really were. Because people are flawed. So I dare anybody to watch it now and not cry, because the end will tear your guts out. And I thought, what an interesting way to go, because in the tears, maybe they'll hear the message. With the laughter, that's all they'll remember. So I felt pretty good about it.
That's good. That's cool. Yeah. Was there a lot of conflict at the writer's table about it at all? Or?
Well, nobody wants to end a series. What Roseanne and I did is we didn't want anybody to know. Including the people around us, because, you know, when you're on those things, you don't know who's on the National Enquirer's take. So I believe she was staying at the Beverly Hills Hotel, and I took a tape recorder over there. And everything you hear her talking about when she's sitting at the desk was recorded in her hotel room.
Oh, that's really cool.
Then what we did is on the set, she sat at the desk, and I had a stopwatch, and she went and silently looked around and was thinking, because you heard her thoughts. And we didn't play the thoughts, but we had it already recorded. And then she'd do it for 2 minutes, then I'd say cut, and she'd do it for 3 minutes, then 4 minutes, then 5 minutes, because we didn't know exactly what we were going to use. And then we put it in to whichever one we decided time-wise.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
So not everybody really knew how it was ending. Because I'm sure everybody would have listened. The powers that be had a different way they wanted that whole year to go.
Oh, that was great.
They did not want her to win the lottery. And in the beginning, everybody hated it, but I believe some colleges now teach it as a course.
Oh, really?
And her goal was to just show what happens when people who think it's all about money get that money. And it really doesn't change your problems.
That's very true.
So I think we managed to do that in a comedic way. Like, there's one where Dan Goodman's away, and one of the reasons we did this is for some reason John had a deal the last year where he didn't have to do a bunch of episodes. So what do? So we had him go have an affair, because he had his mother locked up the first year in a mental institution, which, by the way, Debbie Reynolds played in ninth year and was hysterical, but it was a dark episode. We had written something else, and she came and said, my daughter has a better idea. I come and I want to kill my son. Okay. But it was a little dark, a little dark. But there was an episode where he comes home, and we shot it like a soap opera. So there's little hints along the way. But I don't think anybody ever thought of looking at the show that way. But if you go back and look at it that last year, who wins $300 million and stays in the same house? And just redecorates the dump.
That's,
you know what I mean?
Very true. Oh, how interesting.
So there's little clues along the way that what you're seeing. And then somebody once wrote, well, I hope it's not a dream. Boy, that book was almost. And I'll tell you how brilliant she is. We really didn't know where we were going. She just said she wanted to win the lottery, and nobody wanted to do it. So I said, let's do it. And I argued with the powers that be, and that was that. And she says to me around the third episode, boy, we can't do a dream. They'll kill us. And it's how good her mind works. I think you're too, Alan. In one of the episodes, they built me a room downstairs to write. Dig up that episode. And she flashes back to that, I think.
How smart.
And brings it all full circle. But that's how her mind
works. That's brilliant.
Yeah, that's how her mind works. So I liked it.
Yeah, that's really neat.
I liked it, and I got to have my name on an ending episode of one of the greatest shows of all time.
Yeah, that,
so
that's...
it was an honor on a million levels, let alone she's my friend.
That's true.
So cool.
How did you do when the Becky transition happened?
When we bought her back, or when we replaced her?
Both.
Because she came back.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think we dealt
all,
with
all
that
of it.
On a credit tag where we did, you might be too young, but Patty Duke had a show.
Mm-hmm.
And she played twins. She mm-hmm. played the wacky rock and roll and then the proper English girl.
Yeah, the Patty Duke show.
Yeah, and I think the theme was, here's Patty, you, da, 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 and then there's da, 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 da. And the song compared the difference. So even though these two girls really didn't look alike, we did the exact dance and choreography that Patty Duke does using the special effects, only we didn't have the special effects.
Mm-hmm.
The two girls just faced each other like it was a mirror. And we did the Patty Duke theme. And that's how we explained her coming
back. I like
it. Just blew it off in a joke.
I like that.
Wow, that's cool. But I totally agree with you. I think Roseanne is one of the top sitcoms. I think definitely top five. You know what I mean? Whenever someone asks me, you know, what are my favorite sitcoms, I say Roseanne is definitely in the top five. Because it's like, I only can name
it. Here's where it's at. She's such a powerful presence. And how many sitcoms can you run off that were dominated by women?
Exactly, yeah.
You know, Mary Tyler Moore. Maybe. Well, Carol Burnett didn't have a sitcom. So really, what is there, two women?
Yeah.
I mean, there's been others that had it, but I mean that...
Lucy.
And Lucy, yeah. So look at the company she's in. Yeah. Look at the company.
You're not going to include that girl.
No, Alan...
Listen, I love that girl.
That's a great...
You know, here's a trivia question for you, because you seem to like the past. George Carlin, you know, she was an actress in that sitcom, that
Correct.
Girl. George Carlin was her agent. This is before he's
my
the hippy-dippy weatherman.
Thank you.
He is before all his fame. He had short hair and a suit
and a tie.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Not that George Carlin... all know
no, life. Originally he was part of a team, I believe, and then when he went out, it was like Pryor wanted to be Cosby. You should look up on YouTube. Pryor
in his
suit,
trivia.
You know, doing Merv Griffin, trying, and it's painful to watch.
Oh, it's
it's painful to watch.
Well, like, I'm sure if Pryor was alive now, he wouldn't want to be Cosby.
Well, that was the whole idea. We all start somewhere, and in his own way, I'm sure he's way ahead of Cosby.
Hopefully not.
I don't think Richard wasn't
that
into
way.
Pills. No, he got him the other way. I tell you, we should all have the action Richard Pryor had, legally or illegally. Cosby, on the other hand, is a snake.
Oh, have you met?
Yeah, did you meet?
He's just full of
really.
I want to
Dr. Cosby. You know, if you notice in this world, when some people build themselves up to be greater than anything, the fall is awful hard.
Ooh.
You know that. Baker guy who had the church.
Oh, Tammy.
You know what I mean? Yeah, she was a nice lady. He was crazy.
He was kind of strange.
She actually did an episode of Roseanne. Was
he broke down crying. Right.
Listen, let me tell you about Evangelist.
I have sinned.
Evangelist will cry.
I thought it was a great
performance. You know, your dog looks depressed. Oh, Lord will take him. They cry like that.
So that's
crying
why
is part of their shtick.
It is. Yeah. Very good carnival actor.
Look at the guy who got caught with the girl who wound up in Penthouse. I mean, just a whore,
just
one of the great all-time whores, swaggered. And he goes on, I have sinned. No kidding. Let's get past that part.
It was swagger.
He's still playing the piano when his kid's preaching now. You know, the preaching world is like country western singer world.
There's
you
a sitcom.
Kill your family, record a song, and your fans will go, well, you know, he wasn't right that day.
Well, there's a sitcom waiting to happen with preachers crying and breaking down.
I'll pitch it after the podcast.
You know, religion's tough to make
That's
fun
a tough
of.
One. Oh, no, it's
and
a tough,
really,
tough
you
one.
You know, if they do it in the style of an entourage or something like that, really follow a guy. Yeah. Not go for the comedy, but follow the disease of these people that suck the life and last dollar out of, you know, people that just want to believe in something.
Sure. It's just sad.
Listen, anytime you have a desk full of letters and you wave your hands over, you go, all right, you're all blessed. Or give me a call if you want God water or Jesus water or whatever they're selling.
I love God water.
You know, they're
water.
Taking it right out of the spick and going, oh, yeah, you put our name on there. Put our name on there.
It'd be funny if this person was played by Bill Cosby.
Yeah. Oh, you know, I was so disappointed.
I like how Bill, I don't know if he's frail now or not, but he shows up in court like he hasn't seen anything in 9 years. Like he's Helen Keller. One guy's got his arm leading him. He's dragging his one leg. Yeah, you're 80, you're but, you know, seriously. Seriously.
Well, I'm a strong believer of you're innocent until you're proven guilty, so I'm pretty sure...
Really?
Yeah.
Well, when almost close to 60 women have the same story and they don't know each other,
oh, no.
You're guilty.
So what
I'll go out on a limb here.
So
J-E, yell, yellow.
So what
yeah.
I was...
Stretch, yeah.
So,
yeah.
So what I was going to say...
Pill in with a little pill.
No, what I was going to say is I'm pretty sure of all 70 of the crimes he's been charged with, I'm sure he's only committed 68. Oh, like, I'm sure one or two of them are lying.
I don't think they're counting the two that lied.
Oh, really?
These are all truthful
Is
women.
His wife still with him?
Well, you know, I happen to remember a time in the early 80s, late 80s, early 90s, she was going to leave him. Now, I can't speak for their relationship, but you get used to a lifestyle.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Even though... she'd probably get 50% of the 300, 400, 500 million. Sometimes you don't want to rock the boat, but listen, she has to live with it. I feel bad for her. But, you know, some men are just driven that they don't think they're successful unless somebody's, you know, blowing them in the car. You know, they got $1 billion and nothing. Oh, that's all great, but they have to constantly be reinsured that way. And I'm sure that's some kind of disease. But, you know, it's one thing to be a womanizer and like that. It's another thing to drug the women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's a little strange.
First
yeah.
off, you're the first big black television star.
Huge.
Ever. You're winning Emmys. You're popping out records that are getting every kind of award. If you can't get a girl's clothes off, quit. Quit.
That's really good advice.
Amazing.
So
yeah.
obviously wow. he digs... them unconscious.
Yeah, he likes yeah. it.
And that's
weird.
Therein is a sickness that needs mm-hmm. help.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's
because
true,
if
yeah.
you're a celebrity and can't get laid, get out of the business. Yeah.
Psychedelic necrophilia.
Psychedelic.
Is that what it's called?
The new reality show.
Oh.
For a minute there, I thought
starring Alan Lee.
Like one of those 70 bands that like we've never heard of, you know, like the Electric Plum.
Well, as long as he wears this outfit he's got on, he'll fit in. You know?
I was like, Alan.
I
was like, Alan Lee was smart on that, man.
I'm just looking for shows, ideas, you know, anything.
Now, Mr. Steven, I have a question for you.
Threw me with the Mr., but go ahead.
Oh, no, because, anyways.
Only two places you learn to say Mr. In the service in prison. But I'll let you keep your secret.
Okay. Mr. Alan Steven, I have a question for you. Do you like sitcoms with a live audience track or without?
You mean a phony laugh track?
Yeah. Well, no, because there's some sitcoms out there like...
No, here's the difference.
Yeah.
A live one records the live audience and just uses that. Most shows have a phony laugh track or enhance theirs with a phony laugh track.
Yeah.
Yes, I did not do that.
No.
I can't say what happened before I was in charge of that at Roseanne.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
When I took over, I don't know how it is now, but back then it was just a handful of people that knew how to work this particular laughter instrument. And they did every show, and you'd go in there, and they're, you know, they're bitter and jilted. They do it all day long, and they're sitting there with Punky Brewster going, oh, God, that's a joke. You know, so they just do this with the button. You know, somebody comes in, how you doing? You don't know where the jokes are. You're going to make them. When I went in there, I actually turned around and said, what was that? Well, we thought there should be laughter. I go, but there wasn't, so leave it alone. So I did a lot of things that they wouldn't normally do, like, the one playing Roseanne's baby in the last few years, I think there's a cold opening where she's talking to the baby, and you never know what they're going to do. And normally they're twins. For some reason, we didn't have a twin. And he's sitting there, and she's talking, and then you got to do it again. And, you know, the baby starts to fidget a little bit. And this kid's being pretty good, and she takes a carrot stick that's there, and she just dips it in chocolate and sticks it in his mouth, and the kid goes, whoa! And when I got the edited version before, you know, it goes to networks or Roseanne. I said, what happened to that shot? Well, we used another one. The baby, I go, yeah, the baby did what a baby does, put it back.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
That's
yeah,
nice.
Well, yeah. You know, I'm from a different school. Well, I didn't go to the Harvard and the Yales. And, you know, I came from the school of hard knock laughter. Well, that, so it was hard for me to sit with these people. Well, that's funny, Alan. You know, maybe senior year at your place it was. But I do it every night. So I had a lot of problems with the... And so did you have Norm on yet?
Yeah, yes, I had did. Norm, yeah.
Well, Norm calls them, I think, Yaleys, and I think I call them Harvard shits.
Right, that's right, yeah. Yaleys.
Yeah, I love Norm. He's one
he
of my best friends.
He wasn't happy with those people either.
Yeah.
So who do you think is really funny?
Today?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any favorites?
Well, I do like the guy you had on Bags. I love Bill Burr.
Great. Bill Burr's great.
Yeah.
It's very hard to make me laugh. I come from an old school where everybody, when I started, everybody on the lineup was funny. Not two guys out of 20. Every one of them. And then in between them was huge celebrities.
Yeah.
So you either
incredible.
Sunk or swam. There was one point where I got comfortable, and let's say four celebrities would go on, and I'm scheduled like to go on at 1 in the morning, and the last celebrity would be done at 11:30. Well, all the comics in between me and them wouldn't want to go on. I don't want to follow them. But it's tricks at that point. All you have to do is be dismissive and never let them see that you're nervous. You know? Like one time Paul Mooney, you know Paul.
Yeah.
Who he is. Paul Mooney was just killing in there one night. And I went up and, you know, they're just staring like, well, who is this guy? And I said, Paul, are you still in the room? He said, yeah. I go, bring the car around. I think, oh, who is this guy? You know, nobody laughed harder than Paul, but I think I did that with Richard one night. You just gotta, you know, move on.
I once went, Amy Schumer once came up in front of me because she was doing a set to practice her jokes for a roast at the Improv, so my time got cut, but they still let me perform, you know. I went up after her. And, like, everyone was like, oh, my God, Keith's going on after her. And I was like, well, it's either I go on now or I don't go on the
See,
show.
In my day,
yeah,
you were a puss if you didn't.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's the game. They are no different than you. If you're a plumber, you don't follow another plumber.
Yeah.
You know, they just have to, they're just either doing better at the time. That doesn't make them funnier.
But I remember all
and
the comics were like...
some of these people get a celebrity buy. You ever see that one?
Oh, yeah.
Where they'll get a buy for 5 minutes, and then the audience will go, wait a minute, they're not funny.
Yeah. Well, see, everyone was like, oh, my God, you're actually... I remember it was either I go up after or I don't perform on the show. And I was like, I love stand-up so much, I'll just go up after. And, like, Amy came up to me after the show. She's like, hey, you're really funny. And then she left.
She respected what you did. There's no need to be afraid. And if you are, get out of the business.
That's true.
Get out of the business. If you don't think you're funny enough to follow, and I can see if you think you're too new, you know what I mean? But the only way you learn, and this is the beauty of comedy, you never stop learning.
That's true.
You never stop learning.
It's a book.
And unless you, listen, the whole thing is already walking a tightrope. It's an unnatural act. Why would you not just challenge it on every level? I mean, it's the hardest art form you can do, besides ballet dancing. And ballet dancing is harder only because it's got a short lifespan and you cripple your feet and bleed.
Yeah.
But we do that mentally.
Yeah.
I like that.
So.
That's great advice from Alan Stephen, guys.
There you go.
And we only have a couple more
minutes.
The guy
who wrote the ending show you probably don't like.
we only have a couple minutes because the director gave me the light. But, Alan, is there anything that you're working on now that you want to promote or you can't say?
Well, I can't say. I will say it involves...
Keith Reza?
A huge celebrity.
Oh.
But we've been chasing him for a year and a half. But we'll see.
Is it John Cusack?
No.
Damn.
No. No, but if I see him, I'll tell him.
Please do. Yeah, tell him Megan says
and
hi.
And he'll say, you mean the girl that tweeted 20 times?
Uh-huh. Yeah, leave it at 20. That sounds
40
better.
More. I go, yeah, those two.
that's a perfect.
That's scarily accurate.
Is there? Do you want people to like find you on Facebook or like where they could?
Well,
like,
if they're interested in dating me, they can go to Facebook.
Oh, are you single?
Yes.
Oh, ladies.
There you go.
He's very handsome. I'll take some glamour shots later and post them for you.
Just we keep the 100. Or if you want to give me a job or just say hi, I am on Facebook.
All right.
I do enjoy that.
Alan Steven, and he's my friend on Facebook.
He's my friend.
Thank you.
You're
and
not
you
my
come
friend.
Come pitch me your show.
Yeah, we're going to do it. I'm going to talk to you. I don't want to say it on the airwaves because I don't want someone to take it.
No.
But we'll talk privately after the show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because it's a great it's a great idea.
In the psychedelic green room.
Yeah. No. I think you'll like the idea.
Your voice is just. Who's the guy Stern always has on from Star Trek?
Oh,
he's got a fantastic
Shatner?
Voice. No, the
no. Shatner.
You're not Shatner, Alan.
He was one of the guys on there.
Stuttering John.
Gay man. I can't think of his name.
Oh, George Takei.
Oh,
your voice and his voice together.
That.
Oh my God, that's funny.
Like
I hear
late
it.
Night jazz.
Yes.
And now,
yes.
Stunning sounds of.
Absolutely.
You just have a great voice.
Bobby Slayton said Alan has a late night radio voice.
That's what I just said. Only smooth jazz. And by the way, I love that man.
Oh, Bobby Slayton.
Oh my
yeah.
God. We had a blast.
There's a guy.
On the show.
You know, see, to me, there's funny. There's funny, and it's been funny. You know, a lot of these guys aren't going to last, I don't think. Bill Burr will. But some of them are flavor of the month. Look at Bobby Slayton. Consistently great. Funny forever. Great.
I love Bobby. I call him my comedy grandfather.
He's a great man.
So, all right, guys. Well, we got to go.
Pretty daughter. Let me just say that, too.
Oh, pretty.
All right. Yeah, she's a singer.
Yeah, she's in a band, right?
Yeah.
She's, like, huge.
Yeah. Bobby mentioned that.
Yeah, he did.
He's very proud. He should be.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for having me on. I know it's time to wrap up.
Yeah, thank
so
you
for directing through the
you
back
so
of my
much
head.
For
yeah.
So,
thank you, honey.
Alan Lee, do you have anything going on before you head
you
out?
Know, we were going to share with Alan that we're going to go visit Mark Maron now. He's at the Steve Allen. So that's all I have going on is that I'm going to, you know, bother him. We're all going to stalk Mark Maron.
Excellent.
The Steve Allen.
I think the stalking thing, we don't actually stalk people. This is
yeah. Roseanne, if you're listening, it wasn't stalking.
No,
it was my Asperger's that screwed that
it's
up.
It's all funny. It's all in fun, Roseanne.
All right. But no, seriously, Roseanne.
She's listening.
I'm sure she's tuned in right at
this
moment.
What's up, Roseanne?
She has just a little room in her house where she has every podcast clip. All 9,000 of them.
Well, guys, this episode of Razor Riffs is brought to you by the Stand Up Magazine, and
that I'll soon be in a
that, yeah,
yeah.
That Alan Steven is going to do.
First people here.
And you could download a copy at www.thestandup.net, and that's again www.thestandup.net. The Stand Up Premier Comedy Magazine. It has Theo Vaughn on it this month, who
maybe I'll try to be their first nude centerfold.
Yeah,
there you go.
I'd buy
right
it.
Here.
You'll go blind.
It's a great magazine. It tells you about comedy and stuff, and we're going to get you on it. And, you know, that's going to be awesome, guys. I'm Keith Reza, Alan Lee. Say goodnight, buddy.
Goodnight, buddy.
What? And the beautiful Megan Jenkins.
Goodnight.
Goodnight. And once again, thanks again, Alan, Steven.
Good night.
That was awesome, man.
You're listening to Razor Riffs with Keith Razor and Alan Lee right here on LA Talk Radio.